Whoo, Courtney, I just ran 3 miles in my daily morning routine. I'm feeling buff. And when I say 3 miles, I mean from the bedroom all the way down to the kitchen and back, which has to be 3 miles at least.
Or it certainly feels like it some mornings.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
Well, I'm pretty sure I know, or I've got a hint of who we're going to be talking to, and I bet she's going to add some energy to your day. So tell me who, confirm for me that the rumors are real of who we've got coming to talk to me today.
Well, according to today, we have Brittany King, who is someone I don't have a bio in front of me. Doggone it. I'll edit that together. Okay, hold on. Let me dig up a bio. Doggone it. You had one thing to do. You had one job today, Jim. One job. Hold on. Hold on. I'm gonna find it. I'm gonna find it. Brittany King is a passionate, self-proclaimed hope dealer who has created a bold reputation for herself as a speaker and talent acquisition consultant, due not only to her triumphant life journey, but her commitment to helping people impact the world for good. Whether she's speaking from the stage or doing corporate consulting, Brittany's superpower lies in her ability to deliver actionable strategies on how to turn change into opportunity. Brittany has shared the stage as a speaker with the likes of Star Jones, Destiny's Child, Latavia Robertson, and BET's Miss Mikey. Brittany aims to spread the message that obstacles are meant to be overcome. Brittany is an AmeriCorps alumna and recipient of the President's Volunteer Service Award, a full scholarship recipient to attend Clinton Global Initiative University and Clinton Global Initiative America, a speaker and scholarship recipient with the National Conference for College Women Student Leaders, and an alumna of the American Association of University Women's Young Voices Project. Brittany has been featured in Glamour Magazine, ooh, and has been published on Berkeley Center for Religion, Peace, and World Affairs website. Brittany holds a BA in psychology, and I can personally attest after meeting her, she's super awesome. You are listening to Tribe Pod, a podcast series of interviews of interest to the HR community. It is hosted by Courtney Lane, produced by Jim Stroud, sponsored by Proactive Talent, and enjoyed by you. Today's episode begins right after this.
Recruitment marketing, as compared to maybe employer branding, is all about getting your message and your story in front of the right audience. It's a lot to manage, and what Proactive Talent does for our clients is we help centralize so you have one partner, one vendor to help you manage all those relationships. And not only that, we help you track the effectiveness of every media dollar you spend on hiring so that you know in real time that you're getting the greatest ROI for your marketing investment to attract great talent into your company. We help our clients with recruitment marketing in a couple ways. One is in recruitment marketing strategy. And with that, we really take the time to help you build the right strategy, and then we get mutual approval on that strategy before you spend a single dime. The other way we do this is through our agency of record service. This is a partnership with you where we're able to reach out to publishers on your behalf to negotiate better pricing, to execute on media campaigns, and really act as an extension of your team. Some of the benefits that our clients have seen working with Proactive Talent's recruitment marketing services is an overall reduction of 30% cost per applicant. That's really significant. It's showing that we're able to leverage great technology, programmatic, and we're also flexible and scalable. We're platform agnostic. We're always going to use whatever the greatest and latest technology is, whatever the best platforms are to help create efficiencies in your media purchasing so that you're always on the cutting edge.
For more information on Proactive Talent, visit them online at proactivetalent.com or click the link in the podcast description.
So, good morning, everyone. I am so excited to have today's guest with us, the amazing Ms. Brittany King. Now, I have the pleasure of knowing Brittany, but Brittany, before we hop into our conversation today, Share a little bit about yourself with our audience so they know who you are, and we'll hop in from there.
Awesome. So I am a professional speaker, and I'm also a talent acquisition consultant for Fortune 500 companies. And I have over a decade of experience in that. But I think what is perhaps the most important thing and what I am most proud of is that I am a mom boss, right? So I call myself a mom boss, but I tell everyone so that they can understand who I am is that I'm a middle child. And I'm a preacher's kid, which means I am certified crazy. So that'll give you a little bit of insight of who I am.
Awesome. Well, welcome, Brittany, to the show. We are so excited to have you here. And for the folks listening, the reason that I wanted to have Brittany come and chat with us today is because she has a incredible story of how she got to where she is. And I think it's one that we can all relate to, but also something that, you know, we can all sort of learn from and be inspired by as well. Because, you know, and Brittany, you and I have talked about this as recruiters. None of us sort of grew up as a kid and said, I'm going to grow up and be a recruiter someday. So, right. You know, how did you get into recruiting? Like, tell us your story. Cause we know it, you know, I've heard it and it's amazing. So tell us how you got to where you are today and what made talent acquisition and consulting what you wanted to do.
It's actually a very interesting story. So I was in East Texas pursuing my undergraduate degree with my less than 2-year-old daughter. We were living in the projects, just trying to get by. And I had a psychology professor who just took a liking to me. He took me under his wing and I came to class one day and he said, hey, I got you an internship at the city. And I was like, hold on, excuse me, you did what? He's like, yeah, you're going to go work in HR at the city. And you're going to learn all these HR things because, you know, IO psychology very much aligns to human resources. And so I said, okay, I'm going to go get some shmoney, as I say today. So I went to this really small city in East Texas. It was actually Nacogdoches. I worked in the human resources department, and I very quickly found that TA was the part of human resources that I enjoyed the most just because of the people interaction. So at that time, I was hiring firefighters, police officers, admin assistants kind of thing. And I realized that the interaction with people is something that I really, really loved. And after that, I got a job offer in East Texas to be like a junior recruiter. And then the story just goes on from there. So that's really what happened. And Courtney, you hit the nail on the head. I never in my wildest dreams thought I would be a recruiter or TA consultant. I was just like, I'm going to be a psychologist. And my professor is like, no, just kidding. You're going to go into HR. So,
you know, over the years and the work that you've done, you know, I'm sure you have seen just recently even so much of a switch in the type of relationship, or do you think it's been the same? Like are recruiters the same sort of folks they were 10 years ago, or are we a different breed now in this sort of new age of being highly tech driven and remote? And some of that existed even before COVID.
Right.
So how have you seen that sort of affecting your experience over the past decade?
So I have to answer this question and say that good recruiters have evolved. I have a lot of experience in the RPO industry, which is recruitment process optimization. And what I have found is that I would have, you know, when I was at 5 years in that industry, I would have people who had came in for 20 years and they could not keep up with our systems, our processes, our technological advances, because they very much stayed in what worked 20 years ago. And so while I see some recruiters who are absolutely evolving, adapting to the changing environment that is the talent acquisition landscape, I also see the other end of it. So it's a very interesting experience. But I think, you know, again, I can only say that if you are a good recruiter, if you're someone who really wants to excel in your career, you have to be evolving. You have to be changing. I have been working remote the last 6 years. So for me, you know, COVID and working from home was not a big, oh my gosh, it was like, this is my norm. So that's my insight there.
Do you have any favorite tools or technologies that you use as a recruiter to sort of help you get it done?
I love Intello.
a lot. Yeah. I also love LinkedIn, but not in the traditional sense that people use it. So I have a few hacks that I use. I am very much the kind of person who never meets a stranger. And so I have a very, very deep relationship with the content tab on LinkedIn. I never search for someone, jobs, people, I just don't. So those are two of my favorite, Intello for sure. And then I also love LinkedIn.
Yeah. I'm going to have to like ask you offline to tell me more about how you're using LinkedIn, because that sounds interesting.
So, and, you know, it's funny, Courtney, it's actually how I found Will. I used the content tab. Years ago, he had posted that he was looking for a recruiter, and I like hacked the system and I was like, hey, I'm your girl. So that's how that came about.
And for those who are listening and may not know, Will is our fearless leader here at Proactive Talent. And I think we all have a story of just sort of, how we found Will and got to make that connection there. So now I want to say, Brittany, I know that, you know, outside of being a recruiter, you've taken it to another level, and that you go and you speak. And, you know, I've not had the pleasure to sit in one of your sessions, but I would have to imagine that in those, you know, environments, you're not only talking about recruiting really like from, you know, the nuts and bolts of it, but you're talking about something bigger. Am I right in guessing that? Like what kind of things are you out there talking to folks about?
You are absolutely right. So one of the things, other than Mom Boss, one of my other most most loved and most cherished titles is Hope Dealer. And so I take that title very, very seriously. When I'm speaking to organizations, universities, you know, schools, whatever, I'm very much talking to them about how to turn challenges into opportunity. So whether you are a solopreneur trying to build a business, or you are a Fortune 500 company, you have to be able to be adroit and to adapt. And so in every single talk that I give, that's kind of the foundation. You're in a challenging situation. How do we turn this into opportunity? And that very much aligns with recruiting, because if you think about fundamentally what recruiting is, it's there's a need in an organization, and employees are the lifeblood of the business. And so if we can turn that challenge to find top talent into an opportunity to position ourselves and our employer brand, to make sure that we are managing the tools of talent attraction that are necessary, then we will find so many other things to our benefit. So everything I do, and the interesting thing is I talk to, you know, third and fourth graders. I've done a lot of talks at schools, at elementary schools, but I also talk to, you know, corporations, organizations, all of that. I recently did a talk where I was a keynote in front of Miss Universe, Miss America, Performers from America, Got Talent, Harvard and Yale faculty. But the reason why they chose me as a keynote is because that message resonates with anyone. Talent acquisition, recruiting or not, we will all face challenges, and we all have the chance to turn it into an opportunity.
Do you think there are common challenges that is specifically in the TA area, thinking about, you know, the people that are listening to us today being HR and talent leaders, do you think there are common challenges that we're all sort of getting tripped up by, or is every organization unique?
That's such a loaded question, Courtney. You know what? I think every organization, regardless of what you are in, where you are right now, is facing the challenge that is the elephant in the room, which relates to, you know, what's going on with Black lives, what's going on in, with the racial tension and the heightening of kind of this, I don't even know what to call it. I feel like we're facing two pandemics at the same time. Mm-hmm. So we have COVID, and then we have the racial tension. So I think that's something that's always happening. And to me, that goes more with diversity and inclusion. Yeah. I think that's always something that people are struggling with. I have often had conversations with the senior vice president of human resources on how do we find this unique group of people? What do we do outside of the traditional things? What else can be done? And I think one of the things that's happening, I put a post on LinkedIn just a little while ago, is that so many leaders are having conversations in the boardroom without mm-hmm. input from people in the break room. Mm-hmm. So that's a really, really big problem. Really big problem that I see. I also think that a lot of recruiters, because there's no formal career path, I think a lot of recruiters are ill-equipped to do their job effectively. So there's a lot of conversation about recruiters not following up with candidates, not doing what they need to do. Well, the truth is a lot of recruiters don't follow up because they're scared that they're going to be in a precarious position if they give the candidate the wrong information. So there's this lack of training to really help people understand the compliance that's required, but also how to do their job effectively and protect the interest of the company. So for me, those are the two big things that I think are happening.
When you're thinking about diversity, in particular, you know, the role of the recruiter, do you think there are ways that recruiters can, you know, they themselves take ownership of that, them help, you know, ensure that there is a more diverse applicant pool and candidate pool that's being presented? Is there anything they can do in, as individuals without it necessarily having to be, you know, coming down from the top, or do they have to wait?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
No, I think they better be taking ownership of that, to be honest. I think that they absolutely have the responsibility to take ownership of that. And the way that you do that, so a lot of people will go on Google and say women's organizations or veterans organizations, and they're not putting themselves in the mind of what's the cause of this deficit? It's not that women, minorities, veterans, people with disabilities don't want jobs. They are having a hard time finding it because they don't know where to go. And so one of the first questions I got asked when I was interviewing for that junior recruiter position so long ago was, how do you find talent in this area? What would you do? And I was like, you just Google and you like, you know, like, Google has all the answers. And they were like, no, like you have to understand this deficit and why it exists. And so if as recruiters, we operate from the mind frame of someone in that position, or we get feedback from a disabled person, you know, someone who is a minority, where do you hang out? What Reddit groups are you in? What LinkedIn groups do you like? And, you know, we all have friends, or we all have someone that we know that may be a part of that group. So I think a recruiter who does not take ownership of that probably needs to find another job. But those are the kind of things that should be done. You should be owning that and positioning yourself as a strategic partner to upper management. So for me, that's a really big thing. I love Twitter, I love Facebook, I love Instagram, but I also do not disregard in-person meetings, networking. Talent is all around us. It is all around us. And sometimes it's so present that we miss the opportunity to really see how it could be a benefit to our organizations.
So in this present day where we're all sitting at home, how do we network? How do we find those creative new channels when it feels like we're all sort of stuck in that same interwebs? Any thoughts there?
Yeah. So one of the biggest thing that I think one of the most misused tools is LinkedIn. I think LinkedIn is so misused. I can't tell you how many times I get invite requests or a message request from somebody saying, look at my resume, or blah, 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 blah. Or, you know, hey, I want to connect with you because I have this new opportunity, but I can't tell you what it was. It will make you a lot of money. And it's like, what are we doing? So what I have found is when someone reaches out to me and they send me their resume unsolicited, I will take a moment, I'll look at their resume, and then I'll respond, because it's about creating rapport. So even though we're at home, even though we are, you know, perhaps have cabin fever, I believe that we have an opportunity to really reach out and form deep connections. So many of us take the stance of connecting with a whole bunch of people. So I have a lot of friends who are like, oh my gosh, I got all these LinkedIn connections, blah, 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 blah. And then they have all these phone calls and, you know, coffee conversations, but the relationships aren't deep. So for me personally, I don't focus on the breadth or the depth, you know, the width of the connections. I focus on the depth. So I want to be deep. So I may only talk with one person in a month, but then I'll follow up with them for the next 6 months. And the people that I have found, even past clients that I've had and worked for who are startups or whatever, I'll send them an email every quarter. It's scheduled on my calendar, COVID or not. Hey, you know, one of the most recent emails I sent out to Will, our fearless leader, he was one of them that received it, or someone else was, I just want to connecting during COVID. How are you doing? So many people forget about the human and human resources. So use LinkedIn, but use it wisely and seek to see how you can serve others and not just your own interest.
I think that's really important. And I think it's a good reminder that just because we're doing it digitally doesn't mean that we can get away with just, you know, sort of keeping things so, you know, just at the top level and not really digging in and taking the time to get to know each other and build into that relationship, build that equity into that relationship. So it feels like it is adding value to both individuals and is not just a, oh, I'm going to add you. And then in 3 months, I'm going to send you a message to see if you will, you know, buy this new shampoo that I love.
Right. Like, I don't want the shampoo. I don't want it. Yeah. And you know, Courtney, I do the same thing with reading. I actually learned this principle from reading books because I am a bibliophile. I love books, but I would read all these books and there's this trend with people who love to read this. I read 50 books this year. I read 100. And it's like, oh, you know, we take a lot of pride in that. But then I started rereading books. So I won't read more than 5 books in a year because I'll read them over and over and over to make sure that I'm understanding what I'm reading. So that's kind of where I developed that process of going deep. And in relationships, when you're following up with the same people, and it doesn't mean you can add more people to the roster, but when you're following up, just, hey, I saw you posted about your kiddo, you know, oh my gosh, how are they doing? How's your son? How's that golfing thing going? One of the ways that I got one of my positions is that I saw someone post on Facebook a while ago. She was like a TA leader and she loved Hello Kitty. She was obsessed. And I was like, okay. So when I reached out to her, I put a Hello Kitty GIF in the email. And I'm like, just saying hello. She's like, how did you know? But what we miss a lot of time as TA professionals is that there's so much information online that people are already sharing. They're giving you essentially the gold to make the relationship deep. They're telling you, oh my gosh, my favorite thing to do is run ultra marathons and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, you miss that because you automatically go to, this is what I want for you, from you. Can you help me achieve this? So that's a little bit of something that I've learned that's proved to be beneficial for me.
So for a lot of folks, or for a lot of recruiters or TA leaders who have maybe never been in the RPO space, and I include myself in this group, you know, it from an outsider's perspective, it seems very different than the sort of in-house corporate recruiting function. And I'll be honest, when I meet folks that come from RPO or agency, man, they've got some grit. They've been in the trenches. Do you think that you had that sort of grit about you going into it and that's why you were successful in that space? Or do you think it was something that that role sort of helped build up that strength within you, or a little bit of both? I mean,
I think it had to be a combination of both. I consider myself inherently to be gritty, if I could say gritty. But I also think the RPO business that I was in was the number one RPO leader in the world with this global presence that had recruiters had a shelf life at that company of 6 months. I was there for almost 6 years. And so I think the combination of my innate just kind of stick-to-itiveness and my desire to persevere positioned me for that. But I also, it was building, you know, flying the plane while you're building it in the air. That's a common phrase we use in TA, but it's like sink or swim, figure it out. And what I have learned, because I've worked in corporate, I've worked in-house corporate, I've done staffing and I've done RPO, and they are very, very different. Even different from recruiting optimization, which I have also done. Staffing is much more light, if I could say that. The RPO world, especially for the company that I was with, is very, very tough. It's very tough. If you succeed as a TA professional at any level in the RPO world, to me, you can go anywhere.
So would you then advise for somebody, you know, a young person who's maybe considering exploring recruiting, though, in all fairness, I think most people do fall into recruiting versus like go seek it out. But right. For those that may actually be considering recruiting, I mean, do you think RPO is the way to get your feet wet, or is there an extra value in coming that route, or is it sort of depend on the person? I would imagine it depends on the person, but at the same time, I look at folks who have been in that RPO space and I know that they've got some skill sets that in an in-house experience, it just was never there. The push wasn't quite there the same way that sort of built in some resiliency that I think you see more in the RPO agency space.
I think it does depend on the person, but I also think, you know, so many things are like a muscle. The more you do it, the stronger you get. And I would not advise someone straight out of college to go into RPO if they somehow land in the HR and recruiting field, because they will reconsider their whole life. But, you know, if you've got a year or two under your belt and you're trying to transition and have your career ascend, go get a few years of RPO experience, and that will position you to really, really be successful going forward.
So changing subjects a little bit, but you talk about yourself being mom boss. What does that mean? What is mom boss?
That means that I am a proud single mom of my two daughters. When I tell my story of recruiting and getting into HR, it is very much a story, like you mentioned, Courtney, of having to be gritty. I did not, no one told me, you know, my professor vouched for me at this internship, but honestly, I was seriously living in the projects with my oldest daughter, who is now a teenager, where it was so bad that they wouldn't deliver pizza. And so it was just an interesting evolution of myself into this woman who, you know, just was dead set on not being a statistic. So many other people, you know, had other opportunities that I did not, that I had to seek out. And I was told over and over again, you're going to fail. You will be a statistic. And I was like, absolutely not. And so that mom boss title is something that I really, really treasure, because my daughters were the catalyst for me really, really going after my dreams, really being serious about my education, but also being serious about my career. I don't know if I've told you this story, Courtney, but I have an interesting story where I was laid off back in 2014 at one of the hospitals here in Houston. And after 4 weeks on the job, they called us in and said, you're all fired. Well, not fired. You're all laid off after 4 weeks. And so about a week later, I put a post on LinkedIn that said, now interviewing my next employer, Fresh Prince Version. And from that, I was able to find a job that nearly tripled, well, about doubled, a little bit over doubled my salary, and gave myself and my daughters a new opportunity at life. And so all of those things kind of come in to the mom boss title.
Are your daughters a reflection of you? Are you seeing that, like, that drive and that push for them to then really want to, you know, face their challenges? Is there sort of navigating things as they grow up, or, you know, how are you seeing your influence impact them?
So I see it in subtle ways. My oldest daughter, you know, she has kind of an aversion to being a mini version of me, but I see it. She would never, you know, she's anti-entrepreneurship. She's anti-public speaking, all because those are things that I love. But in her determination to do the right thing, she's very serious about school. I never have had to tell her to clean her room. She just has this inherent responsibility to just get things done. So in her, I see that. Now, my youngest, I called her Little Hurricane when she came here, because she was the exact opposite. But that's also who I am. And so, you know, at 7 years old, she was a published author after complaining that, oh, I don't like to read. I hate books. And so I challenged her. I said, why don't you write the book that you want to read? And she did. And before her eighth birthday, the month before her eighth birthday, she was a published author. So I see it in them in different ways. And it's really an honor to be their mom. I call them my little best friends.
That's awesome. Now, I have to imagine that while your daughters were certainly a huge factor in the motivation for you to push forward and do things, you did come over or come through a lot of adversity and you persevered. Did you have cheerleaders that were in the background for you outside of your daughters? Were there people in your life that were you know, giving you positive vibes and feedback and saying, you got this, girl? Or, you know, did you feel like you're sort of blazing your own path on your own?
No. I definitely had an army behind me. I am abundantly blessed to have parents who will show up for me no matter what. But also, it's like I have this tribe that sometimes I'm not even aware of that's like rooting for me and helping opportunities to open for me. I have often had bosses, team leaders, people at different organizations who would speak on my behalf, who would help me find opportunities. And so I've really been blessed in that way. I don't think anyone can operate as an island. And I honestly believe that my army has helped shape me into the woman that I am today.
So I think you're seeing the payoff of those deep relationships instead of like just broad sweeping, but really, you know, feeding into those relationships, filling others' cups, and they're coming back and filling yours. And
absolutely,
it's powerful for sure. So as we're wrapping up, I want to ask, do you have, you know, a favorite area of recruiting that you like to recruit for? Or are you one of those that you're sort of, you know, jack of all trades? It's more about the hunt than really a specific area that you feel called to.
I don't feel called to a specific area. What I feel called to is helping people find work. I tell people all the time that we often miss, you know, coming from the background, you know, being a preacher's kid and someone who was a believer, we often miss that we can be a blessing to other people in whatever work we do. So I really try to go above and beyond, even in the candidate relationships, to make sure that they understand and they feel valued by me. Because recruiters, we miss it sometimes and understand that we're the face of the organization. We don't understand that. That's what I meant to say. We don't understand how much power we have to represent an organization. So for me, I feel called to make sure that every single interaction is one that is kind, that is compassionate, and that is going to reflect what the organization that I'm associated with would like me to reflect.
And what would you tell the HR and TA leaders that are listening to us on behalf of recruiters? What would be the advice you'd give them about, hey, as somebody who has sat in the seat, who is a recruiting consultant, here's something I think you should maybe think about more often or consider as you're managing your teams.
Absolutely. And I have to preface this by saying I was once a hiring manager and not necessarily a TA leader, but kind of the leader over recruiters. And so I speak from both ends, understanding their position. My word to TA leaders would be value your people, not in ways that you feel like they would be valued, but in ways that would speak to them. It's kind of like the five love languages. You know, my love language is not gifts. So if you buy me a gift, I am not moved. But if you write a note to me and say, hey, I appreciate you today, that will move me to do things for you that you cannot imagine. So I think that TA leaders have to give their recruiters a voice. And again, that goes back to stop having these conversations in the boardroom without input from people in the break room. So understand that they really are the lifeblood of the business because they're the first interaction of candidates. And just be kind. Be kind.
Well, thank you for joining us today, Brittany. And before we sign off, if you do want to connect with Brittany and build a relationship there, Brittany, what's the best way for them to reach out to you and form that friendship or connection?
Yeah. So you can go to my website. It is BrittanyLKing.com. That's BrittanyLKing.com. Or you can reach out to me on LinkedIn.com/Brittany King.
But no unsolicited resumes.
Please. I'll look at it, but please.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for joining us today. It has been awesome. Brittany, thank you so much. And we'll be talking to folks soon.
Thank you.
Whoa, that was a good podcast. I think we're going to call this one Interview with a Mom Boss.
The Mom Boss.
The Mom Boss. That was pretty good. What was your favorite parts? There were a lot of good parts there.
You know, I know Brittany personally, so I'm a little bit biased in that respect. Mm. But you know, I love her, you know, sort of approach to the ownership that recruiters have to have in the work that they're doing, and that's something mm-hmm. that I certainly hold very true and expect of folks is that, you know, this is. You know, recruiters are only as successful as the amount of ownership and sort of commitment they're making to the work that they're doing. And I think that's right. We do own a lot in that. We are the face. We are that first relationship. And so I think when she spoke to that piece in particular, that really sort of struck a chord with me.
Yeah. I like how she said you have to be a good recruiter, you have to evolve.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So absolutely. I really, really like that. And I also liked how she said, when she talked about networking during this time of COVID and how she responds to these arbitrary resumes.
But that's just so Brittany that her response is not like, oh my gosh, somebody's just sending me random resumes, but to actually sit down, read it, and be able to form a connection there. I think that's how we have to now evolve in this new space where we're not going to get as many opportunities to network face-to-face. We've got to take advantage of these sort of digital exchanges and build those relationships.
Also true, so true. I'm wondering if our listeners have any comments about this episode. If you do, dear listener, by all means, please do send us an email. You can reach us at tribepod@proactivetalent.com. That's TRIBEPOD at proactivetalent.com. Operators, or rather our emails, are standing by. So if all hearts and minds are clear, Courtney, any last words from you?
No, everybody have a wonderful day.
So to everyone listening, bye-bye.